Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. This program does come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs as well at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we are also rebroadcast on Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time at a2zen.fm. So lots of opportunities, as I basically say every week, to find out about what's going on with our guests. We have links to their websites, and we encourage you to go there and check them out. This is a time in which, and actually, no matter how much time goes by, we all, when a loved one departs from this world and has been of a significant nature in our lives, it's always difficult. And at the time of this program, where both my wife and I are dealing with the loss of a dear friend, and we call him that because he was a close dear friend. He lived with us for 6.5 years, and just recently he passed away, and he was my wife's beloved canine partner and companion and protector. His name was Connor, and we think about him on a regular basis. It's hard not to, especially where we live, and every time you turn around, and you go through the same thing, no matter who the loved one is, human or pet. We all go through those emotions, those feelings. We wonder what's going on? Why was this one taken from me? You know, why now? I mean, we think that animals will live to be, I don't know, some dogs maybe 10, 15, 20 years old. Who knows? But what we do know is that we have to enjoy the time that we have with them. And so our hearts are a little sore right now, still dealing with that. But we still have a lot of love and remembrance of the good times, the wonderful things that have come our way through him. Today is an extraordinary day. We have the return of one of our guests who shared with us a wonderful story, her story, in regarding the Divine Mother, and the title of that book was The Divine Mother Speaks. Today, we have the return of Rashmi Kilnani, and she has a new book. It's called The Buddha Speaks, and this is a particular work to the Buddha and the Buddha nature within, if you will, the wisdom teachings of the Buddha made simple. And the Lord Buddha basically challenged in 2010 in the run-up to the end of the Mayan calendar, which we've been dealing with as well on this program. I want to welcome to our program Rashmi Kilnani back to our program, and thank you so much once again for taking time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule, traveling about and talking to people about the Buddha, whose name, by the way, I actually saw a documentary not too long ago about the Buddha, and that his original name, if you will, or his given name, was Siddhartha, if I'm not mistaken. And we actually named one of our cats, who unfortunately is not real Buddha-like. But maybe that's the whole point, is that he takes on some characteristics a little counter to the Buddha, but he's still very much loved and cared for. I want to again thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Richard, for having me on your show. It's wonderful to be back in Los Angeles. What an amazing creative energy.
Well, now, you have several books. Obviously, The Divine Mother Speaks, and here we have The Buddha Speaks. And many people are looking, have been looking, and probably will on into the future for some kind of an anchor. As I shared at the beginning of the program, you know, when you have a loss of a loved one, whether they're within your immediate family or not, they've impacted your life, and then they're gone, and there's this immediate upheaval. And my wife probably said it best. She said that, with an event like that, it brings to mind the fact that how uncertain life is, our own individual lives. And so we're looking for some level of certainty, some level of coherence, if you will, structure, something to hold on to. I remember flying in an airplane, a little two-seater Cessna, and realizing as I don't know how many hundreds, if not 1,000 or 1,500 feet above the ground, thinking, do you realize there's nothing up here to hold on to if this plane falls? And I think that's the way we feel sometimes. There's nothing to hold on to.
Yeah.
Or is there?
Well, as per the wisdom teachings of the Buddha, you know, this whole reality is Maya, a wonderful play, a cosmic joke. And it's not real, but we can enjoy it if we realize that, because we are immortal, eternal, and the soul continues its journey of birth, rebirth. So, you know, you will meet your pet again.
Mm-hmm.
And again and again. But within this framework that we're in of 3D reality, we feel this is it, you know. We don't see the bigger picture, because it's like an ant trying to understand a matchbox. It's too large for us to comprehend with the mind. And that's why the Buddha gave us many simple ways in which to transcend the mind, so that we go into that eternal space. And in that eternal space, the great sages have had the actual experience of eternity, of immortality, of bliss, and the view of many lifetimes, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. The energy doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. It just seems to go away. It gets recreated.
So the wisdom teachings of the Buddha, it says here, made simple. I've not read a lot of the Buddha's teachings, but those that I have read, they didn't seem overly complicated. So how is it that... is it that some people just aren't kind of getting it?
Well, I think that if we were getting even 1% of the wisdom teachings that are out there of Jesus and Buddha and the Divine Mother and Kuan Yin, and we can go on, then we would not be in the state we're in today. Mm. You know, there would be more peace on earth, there would be more peace within humans when they meet each other within themselves, would you not say?
I would say, as a matter of fact, I would add to that list, I would add to that list those people who are in, I call it, I just say in a general sense, in the monastic life. They're the ones that are spinning the prayer wheels, and then they're praying with the beads, and whatever the case may be, whatever the modality is, the outward manifestation thereof, they're meditating and so forth.
Yeah,
they're the ones
yeah.
right now that are holding the holding our present universe, so to speak, together. They're the glue. And if they stop, I can't even imagine the chaos and calamity that would come about. So I'm so thankful that they are there helping us in that regard. But we, I think, and if I'm gathering from what you're saying, we now need to sort of become the glue in our own little universe.
Absolutely. So, you know, the book very much explains the difference between relative reality, where we are individuals, and absolute reality, where it is just one consciousness that has become individuals, planets, stones, pets, objects, universes. And to not just understand that intellectually, because particularly in the West, but also in the East now, that it's all becoming one. You know, the intellectual understanding is not enough. One might be a great scholar of, you know, the Bible or the Buddha teachings or other great works, but it's when we have the experiential understanding, and we make meditation a part of our waking, sleeping, eating states of being, where we are able to practice this detached witnessing moment to moment in our lives while we enjoy on the periphery the dance of Maya, the dance of what appears to be so real in our lives.
This is a work, as is described, as was the Divine Mother Speaks. This is a work that was channeled. And this was channeled, 2 or 3 years ago, as of this recording. What were your initial, shall we say, impressions as you began to receive this information?
Well, actually, my publisher, Bob Friedman, who's also the publisher of Neil Donald Walsh and many other amazing books, Richard Bach, and we can send Richard Bach a little prayer because he's met with a little accident on his aeroplane, so mm-hmm. he's recovering, so let's just send him some healing and energy, mm-hmm. an amazing author in his own right. So Robert Friedman asked me to channel this book on the wisdom teachings of the Buddha for the now moment, and I thought, well, that's not going to happen, you know. And then I went back to London, which is where the channeling process happens for me, and it began. And so I called my colleague Amruati, who teaches many modalities of Reiki energy medicine, and we created an altar and started meditating and put on some beautiful chanting music, Mongolian overtone chanting, and this energy came through. And I'm able, I don't actually write my books, I'm able to hear, to feel the energy and translate the energy very quickly into words. And so there's not much thinking that goes on during that process. And it happens quite quickly, actually. It's relatively immediate. And so this energy was coming through, and I was asking... my only intention was that I should ask very heartfelt questions to the Buddha that pertain to myself and to humanity as a whole in the bridging of these wisdom teachings from 600 BC to help people in the now moment, presenting the Buddha as an ascended master. So this is definitely not a religious book. It's a spiritual book, and it's energetic, and it's experiential, and contains the energy of meditation, bliss, nirvana, detachment, disidentification, neti neti, which is neither this nor that, behind the words.
Hmm. Now, you were born and raised in India. Have you taken on a specific spiritual path in that regard, or is it much more eclectic in that regard? Because I'm not sure that, shall we say, the work that you do, the books that you write, that come from this wonderful gift of channeling, are necessarily a part of some of the more, shall we say, traditional religions.
Absolutely.
Using that
Absolutely.
Terminology.
When I awoke to this energy in this lifetime that I wanted to connect to my spiritual self, I began through meditation, and it so happened it was an American Buddhist teacher who was a normal person in life. He was a creative director of a big advertising company in Dubai, of all places. And so wherever I went, people wanted me to become a teacher of that religious practice. You know, it could be Baha'i or Guru Mai stuff, which is Siddha Yoga and so on. But I wanted it to be non-denominational. I wanted it to be energy and spiritual of unity consciousness. And then I asked to meet enlightened beings, and I met this amazing woman in India. And I didn't follow her path, but I could see that she was enlightened. And she mentioned Reiki. And I, at the time, I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know where to go. I just scribbled it on a piece of paper, and then it happened. As per the Celestine prophecy, all this synergy happened, and I came to America, studied Reiki, was initiated by Guru Mai in the Siddha Yoga ashram in South Fallsburg, even though Baba Muktananda and Guru Mai came from Ganeshpuri, which is not far from Bombay, where I spent, the first part of my life in Egypt, but then after I was born and after the time in Egypt and England, that when I was 10, I went back to India. But I was born as a Hindu, but I practiced the other religions because I lived in so many different countries, and it was just very interesting that I chose to be non-denominational, and then I went on to becoming one of the senior Reiki teachers of Reiki mastery on the planet, which includes, you know, Buddhism, the spiritual aspects, the energetic aspects of many of the different streams of devotional paths on planet Earth. Does that make sense, Richard?
It does indeed, and I think a lot of people are doing the very same thing. They're realizing that though they do not desire, they do not have the impulse to, shall we say, link to a specific whether it be denomination or path, their spiritual path is one in which, and I think it's probably, in one sense, sort of best exemplified by the Baha'i faith, in that,
yes,
as the Baha'i say, of their founder, Baha'u'llah, that if you reject one of the messengers of God, you reject them all. If you accept one of them, then you accept them all.
That's very beautifully put, because everybody we meet is God, you know, and that's the whole meaning of the mantra Om Namah Shivaya. My third book, I'm really excited because it's going to be published in March 2013, and that is called Shiva Speaks, Mahavatar Babaji Teaches Us Here Now. It's the same Babaji of Autobiography of a Yogi speaking to us now. And so the Om Namah Shivaya means I love myself, I honor myself, God, Goddess, dwell within me as me. Mm-hmm. And yet if you say to people, well, you are God, I am God, they think you're being blasphemous, you know.
And this is where this book comes in beautifully, because it's very hard sometimes, Rashmi, to see somebody else who has just cut us off on the streets or done some silly thing. Oh, they're God too? No, not a chance that they could be God too, because they just did something that was so outside of what I think. And sometimes we can't even look in the mirror and say that.
Yes, well, most of the time, most people can't. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, I very much ask the same question as you're asking, Richard. Why do I need to do this? There are so many books out there. There is so much amazing stuff. And, you know, I've been happy to heal people across the globe and work on my own healing process and self-realization. So why these books now? But I was told by Babaji, who's I call him my boss, and you know, he is the Christ Yogi and the Ascended Master that will be here till all of us ascend. And so the Ascended Masters very much wanted this wisdom to be put in a contemporary, simple way through a channel who has lived across the globe, who has participated in the Muslim faith, in the Hindu faith, in the Christian faith, in her own little way, from living in different countries, from India to Egypt to London to America. And to make people realize that it's so simple, it doesn't really matter which path you choose. And so you can pick up the Divine Mother and go into Egyptian Mystery School or the Mystery School of All Time and Energy Medicine, or you can approach it from so many different ways, and that's what our film, I, God, is going to be about.
Mm.
We're making this film with Neil Donald Walsh, and everyone's in it, you know, all the so-called specialists of America, Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson, and rabbis and people off the street, talking about their concept of God. And through the film, hopefully people seeing that the languages may be different, the words may be different, the names may be different, but the energy is all different parts to the same peak, source.
Yeah, I have actually experienced that kind of a frustration over the conversations that I would hear primarily amongst Christians, and this was back in the late 80s and 90s, over Muslims. Oh, no, they don't worship the same God because they call their God Allah. And Allah does not teach these principles. And then, of course, and I have not read the Quran myself, but I'm aware of certain passages. I'm aware of some of the content, if you will, from some other teachers, and that, and not from the I'm going to call it the propaganda or the hyperbole, if you will, that's put out about what they say the Muslim faith is, or any other faith for that matter. And I think that's where I think a lot of people are beginning the process of saying, you know what, I can't trust these outside sources to tell me the truth. I have to investigate this myself, which is what we encourage people to do on this program.
Which is so important.
Yeah.
And that kind of doubting is actually what, you know, the great saints say, a good kind of doubting, not to just blindly follow stuff. And that's where the religions, unfortunately, have dominated, ruled, and you know, given a manipulated version very often of the truth. And so it's really important to go into meditation, to go into self-inquiry, and to go within. And no one did that better in a way than the Buddha, because he even did away with the concept of God.
Mm.
He didn't talk about God as per se.
Yeah.
And he said, go within and experiment for yourselves. what it's like to achieve this bliss of the void, of the nothingness, of the silence, of the peace, of the stillness that goes beyond the manifest reality and is the powerhouse of the manifest, which even the quantum physicists now know that it comes from the black hole, the energy. Mm. You know, it's from nothingness to somethingness. And so many humans on the planet are now waking up to wanting to get away from conditioning
yes.
of their politics, the conditioning of their religions, the conditioning, well, mummy said this, you know, the priest said that, the politician said that, my television says that, to how do I feel? And what's really going to work now? Because a lot of this isn't working.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we're observing, and we're talking about that on this program as well. There's even a movie that came out not too long ago that sort of spoke to that very thing in terms of how we have been conditioned to look at the television or what have you. I mean, I remember when I saw for the first time advertisements along the baseboards in a baseball game on television. And I thought, no, this isn't right. I mean, first of all, I'm a purist when it comes to, I love baseball. It's a beautiful game, and I love watching it. It doesn't matter who's playing. There's just something about it that's so unique to me. But when I started seeing, I was like, now I'm waiting for advertisements to show up on the ball when it's being pitched, or the bat when it's being swung, or the cap of the player, or like in NASCAR, the where they go round and round in circles and they have all of these advertising stickers all over the car. One of these days, I'm afraid I'm going to see that all over the ball players' uniforms, you know. And it's like, what are they? I can't buy all this stuff. I don't want all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that a lot of people are coming to that realization that enough is enough. For example, the Occupy people, they're criticized because they don't have a goal. Well, my observation and what little I know is, if nothing more, they're tired too. They've said, we've had enough. We don't want to keep going down this same path. And
exactly.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the Buddha Speaks and some of the guidelines or philosophy, if you will, that can take us down a different path that serves all of us, not just a few. We're talking with Rashmi Kilnani. Her book is entitled The Buddha Speaks. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and we're back here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World with Rashmi Kilnani, the author of both The Divine Mother Speaks, and now her latest work is The Buddha Speaks. And let's talk a little bit about some of the things that the Buddha had to say 600 years before Christ that are just as relevant today that can help us to transform. And again, I know that it starts with me. I have to transform myself. So let's talk about what the Buddha had to say about transforming me.
Well, a lot of the people that would read this sort of book already are, you know, well-versed with the teachings of the Buddha. But what this book is really aiming at is, a simplification of a lot of the teachings to its bone, so that it's experiential, as I keep saying, so that you can actually feel peace when you're with that energy of when Buddha's talking about peace or silence, or stilling the mind, or watching the mind, or how, you know, bringing that energy of detached witnessing, not just into when you're sitting in lotus position meditating, but also when you're dreaming, when you're eating, when you're walking, when you're in the world. And a lot of the questions I've asked him and my colleague Amravati have asked him are to do with, you know, how do we bridge, for example, the mundane with the spiritual world, you know. How do we bridge those teachings from 600 BC with paying mortgages and taking kids to school and dealing with 3D reality in the run-up to 2012. And so it's really through reading the words and his answers that you get that energy and that experiential. If you have an intention for peace, if you, you know, if you wish for those things, but if you just look at it, you know, in a kind of critical, you know, intellectual, left hemispherical, I already know this information kind of way, then you would miss that subtle, amazing energy that comes through in the now moment. And that was the greatest part of his teachings then and now, is to be in the now moment. And how do we get into that space, you know?
Mm.
Because the mind is always in the past, and the mind is always in the future.
And how do we do that?
So he goes through a whole book full of ways to do that. But again, it's not technique, it's not knowledge, it's not an intellectual understanding. It's an intention. I really want peace right now. So I'm going to take a minute away from my gizmos, from the busyness of my life, and I'm going to read one little paragraph of this book, or just stay with the energy of the Buddha within me. You know, because the book is called The Buddha Nature. The Buddha speaks to the Buddha nature within. So really, you know, people say, how do I know it was the Buddha speaking to me? To me, ultimately, there is no separation between me and Sakyamuni Buddha and my Buddha nature. Does that make sense?
It does indeed. I know that people do struggle with these kinds of things, and I think that it's the human mind that wants to make it more complicated than it truly is. It's like
so
when
you
say it in simplistic ways.
We're using
ways.
The mind to come to peace, and that's the tricky part. So he starts with very gentle ways. He says, okay, let's start with your mind, because my first question is, what is the meaning of life? And he goes, well, that's a question from your mind, but that's okay. Let's begin with your mind. And let's see what your mind does. Your mind is there to doubt. It's there to fear. It's there to separate. It's there to analyze. It's there to intellectualize. But none of that is going to give you peace. So you can't stop the mind. You know, it's like a dragon with many heads. But you can watch it. You can breathe. You can intend. And intention plus attention equals manifestation. So he gives these different, you know, another very powerful tool he's given us is neti neti, that the only way to come to high truth is through a negation of what is not true. So, you know, we go neither this nor that. You know, I'm not just a nationality. I'm not just a human body. I'm not just, you know, my profession, etc., etc., etc. All the labels that we have of what we are. And the truth is that gives us a feeling of certainty, but there is no certainty. And when we embrace that, you know, embrace the wisdom of uncertainty, then we come into magic, bliss, and amazing synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same wisdom, whether it's the Buddha or in the Vedas or in the Bible, it always comes back to the same wisdom that we can't find the answers outside of ourselves. We have to make that intentionality. And it's only really when most humans are thoroughly fed up that it happens, unfortunately.
I have to wonder if mankind has ever really, really been fed up at any point in our history because of the fact that we've been doing basically the same things for centuries. And that kind of leads me into another little area having to do with our history. And granted, that's not the now. But they also talk about how if we don't learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it, ergo the future, which is also not now, and I understand that.
Yes.
But there would be those who would say, what's the point? I mean, what is really the point? Because how can we actually know that there is a better life if we try this other thing? You know, people have been trying that for centuries, and look where we are. We're still in this quagmire. And I think that that's probably one of the greatest struggles you know, in terms of grappling with destiny and predestination, choice, the ability, the right, the human, if not spiritual right, to choose a direction that we want to go versus, I hear this phrase quite often, in a lot of the history documentaries, that this particular event changed the course of history. And my first thought is, what do you mean changed? So you knew what the history of the world was going to be if this event didn't happen. And because it did, it changed. You didn't know. We just don't.
It's divine mystery.
Exactly. It's what. It's, yes, I know. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and there were a lot of divine mysteries. But do you see where I'm going with this at all? Does any of this? I don't want to say make sense, because in a way it sort of doesn't. But this is the mental. I know this is the whole mental game that we play. That multi-headed
mental
dragon.
You see, the mind then is very, very clever. So one has to approach the whole of the spiritual with the heart energy. So as I said, most human beings have to hit rock bottom before they say, okay, just, you know, I surrender. And that surrendering is important. And what are we surrendering? We're not surrendering amazing stuff. We're just surrendering our misery. We're surrendering the mind that causes the misery. And the mind is okay up to a point, as a computer. So, you know, it's like, do we want to be miserable? And unfortunately, most humans do prefer to be miserable because it's cozy slippers of the habit. Mm. And nobody's insisting that people change. So, but what's happening now is people are waking up because the energy is extremely high and the wisdom teachings are being given now to all of humanity on a silver platter. You don't have to go through huge initiations. You don't have to have been chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo or Om Mani Padme Om for 25 lifetimes anymore. You can just immediately access these energies through books, you know, like Eckhart Tolle has helped to make this wisdom easier for the Western mind.
Mm-hmm.
Thich Nhat Hanh has helped to make it easier for the Western mind. And this little book, The Buddha Speaks, if you just give it a little chance, it can really help to transport you into those spaces of peace, of bliss, of detached witnessing, of understanding what is this disidentification? How can I disidentify? How can I be totally and absolutely involved in my job and be totally and absolutely detached to the result? That's just impossible. But through working with this sort of material, because it has the energy and the blessings behind it, where you connect to your own inner Buddha wisdom. Does that make sense? It's like when you're learning to float or swim initially. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, just because you made a space to learn to swim or float, you're floating and it's magic.
Yeah, I have yet to learn that magic. I can sink real good. I can sink real good, but I haven't mastered the floating part yet. I remember as a kid growing up, and we had a neighbor who had a swimming pool, and we'd go over quite often. My older sister, greatest back floater that I've ever seen, that she was able to just get in the water and just buoyant she was. I don't know, maybe she was made of balsa wood for all I know. I always thought she was a real girl. But I've just was not able to, and I think it was more my insecurities, my fear.
It's all to do with trust.
Yes.
It's all to do with trust,
yeah.
And that's why the floating analogy is so amazing, or,
yeah,
you know, bicycling is a similar,
mm-hmm,
one.
Now that I can do.
And it's about balance, you know, but it's about that moment of trust. And so if we can just trust our heart a little bit, because most people are going through so much misery from this, you know, straitjacket of the conditioning of we have to do it this way, it can only be that way. And so these are just tools out there that are being given now freely and can help you so quickly to come to peace, to come to... And when you come to peace, then you help world peace.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point saying my politicians are rubbish and, you know, we need another Mahatma Gandhi or another, you know, Martin Luther King around. It's for each and every one of us now to become what we wish the world to be, because the world is what we are. And that's the difficult part for the mind to comprehend.
I remember hearing that very phrase maybe 15, even 20 years ago as I was interviewing people along these lines. And, you know, obviously there's that wonderful little song, you know, let peace begin with me. But they would also, again, carry it to that level that you just did in terms of being the peace that you want in your life and in the world. You can't That's why. And when I finally got that, every time I heard the conversations on the news about the peace talks and, you know, they're trying to bring peace to this area, the Middle East or this other area and so on and so forth, I thought that's the wrong kind of peace. That isn't going to cut it. That's not what we're talking about.
It's not organic.
That isn't organic that they're going after.
And then there's the false peace as well, which is, you know, as Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and Einstein say, that to you know, the evil is much more in allowing evil to occur than the person who's doing the evil. So, which is, and evil is the opposite of life, you know. So peace doesn't mean not fighting the good fight when you need to as well. Like, you know, somebody's being beaten up and you're saying, oh, well, I'm just going to be peaceful about this.
Yes.
Then you got to get up and speak and fight or do whatever it takes to stop that as well. But that's one of the questions I asked the Buddha in the book about peaceful conflict resolution. And so, as I say, I highly recommend reading this book, The Buddha Speaks to the Buddha Nature Within. It's on Amazon.com and the internet across the globe, because I don't actually have a copy in front of me. I don't know if you do. But when you actually read the words, you really get transported into those inner spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And once you connect to those inner spaces of source, of silence, of peace within you, then, you know, you find you're so recharged to deal with the outer world and to recreate it in a way that you wish to be as a co-creator on planet Earth here now, which is very much what the current energy is about. It's about win-win, this whole thing of competition, win-lose, fight-flight, survival of the fittest. All those energies are receding and are going to work less and less on the planet. I don't know if you've observed that or not, Richard, in your life.
I know that I have I've done my utmost to maintain it, especially within my career, in that any place I've ever worked, I have never focused on the competition. And I've even told people that. I says, I don't care what the other guy is doing.
Yeah.
Because my job is to do a better job than I did yesterday. Period. And if that works and makes us successful, wonderful. If it doesn't, well, then I'm going to continue the next day. I'm going to try to be better than I was the day before. In other words,
the whole job you've chosen so clearly, you know, it's not our words that matter.
Yeah.
If just now the listeners tune into the energy behind this conversation between Rashmi and Richard, they'll feel an energy of this peace beyond our words.
Yeah.
And it's because Richard has chosen to make his life one of service, in which others are part of who he is. And that's why you're presenting so many different points of view of so many different people as part of a win-win scenario, isn't
it?
You're not saying this is better than that.
No. It's and I think that's the greatest comparison one can make is that, and I even use the analogy from time to time, especially more in conversations with people in regards to relationships. But in general, you know, I say, you know, if there is somebody that say you like and they're not attracted to you in the same way. Consider chocolate cake sitting on the kitchen table.
Mm.
Now, chocolate cake to most of us sounds pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But you know what? I went out and I had a big meal and I've come home and I'm feeling pretty darn good and there's that chocolate cake and it's like, no, I don't want any. Now, does that mean that the cake is bad? No. It just means that right now in the state that I am in, I'm not interested.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing in relationships of all levels and depths. Just because
and choices that we make,
of
which path or what book or what teacher
or
what radio show is going to help us moment to moment.
We have, and I realize that the word discrimination is not a real popular one. We don't want to discriminate against people, but the reality is that we do every day, but not. What we're not talking about discrimination in the context of because of your height, your weight, your skin color, your sex, your sexual orientation, your politics. No, we're talking about where I am today again, using the chocolate cake as the analogy, today, right now, this moment, I'm just not interested.
And that doesn't negate the chocolate cake.
No, not at all. No, we don't want to negate the chocolate cake. I know how important that is to many people.
Exactly. That's really beautiful because I think it's important for all of us to remember that, you know, there's a big inclination in this current modern time to go for what's famous, you know, for what's powerful, for what's celebrity status. So I'll only read that book if it's on a New York's best-selling list, you know. Well, you know, we're very much in this energy of now. I don't know if all of the listeners feel it, but our lives are becoming so intense. And we are very, you know, each day is just spinning by, you know.
Yes.
And we just have to be in the now moment. The whole energy on the planet is of the now moment. And so within that, you know, moment to moment, we can choose different things. And it's not about who's rich and who's famous, and, you know, it's about what feels right in the moment, even if it's not logical.
Yeah. I tell people that some of the greatest equalizers in the universe are, unfortunately, are crises, whether it be natural disasters, you know, earthquakes, hurricanes, and so forth, because they, number one, they don't care whether you're rich or poor or which side of the political aisle you're on or which religion you belong to. They don't care. And in the aftermath, you can't tell the difference between them, the individuals who have the differences. Now, we're all the same now. We're all homeless. Our homes have been brought to the ground by whatever the disaster is. We're all looking for comfort. We're looking for food and water and shelter.
Yeah,
and there is no amount of. That's why I chuckle when I see the commercials of.
That's why these natural disasters are intensifying to help us wake up now.
Yeah.
So it's not that we, you know, no one's putting a gun on our heads to wake up. But the truth is, if we don't wake up, if we don't follow the energy, which is that evolution is waking up, that consciousness is in a wake-up time.
Yeah.
And that means having awareness and coming out of this mesmerized thing about the conditioning. Because that's absolutely right. Once you've had an earthquake and everybody's in the same little, tent surviving, that's what brings people together again and away from their Ferraris and their, you know, I'm a tramp, you're in a Ferrari thing, into we are two humans and we're together right now sharing some bread in this tent. We're alive.
But, you know, we don't have to wait for those disasters to start viewing one another on that equal basis. That's why I chuckle when I see the commercials for selling your gold to this company. Hey, we'll send you an envelope and we'll give you cash for your gold. And then they turn right around a few weeks later and start selling you these gold coins that they made from the gold. And I look at that, and the reason it makes me chuckle, it's because if you come to me with a gold coin in the time of crisis, I'm going to say, that's of no value to me. I can't eat the gold.
You know, when I was a super rich chick, people would say, you know, isn't that amazing? Don't you feel great? And I would say, no, not based on that. Because today it's here and tomorrow it may be gone.
Yeah.
And it was the same for Lord Buddha, you know. He was a major prince. He had a kingdom. He gave it all up. And then he became enlightened, and he didn't know he was creating a religion or anything.
Yeah.
That was not his intention. So I say to people, you know, you were impressed when I was a jet setter and I had homes all across the globe. But, you know, it's like if this wisdom teaching can help you, even before I become a famous author or whatever, then, you know, the purpose of bodhisattvas, and some of us are bodhisattvas that walk the path and come back on earth, so that everybody comes out of suffering, and that because we see everybody as us.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that compassion for ourselves and others.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's more important than how many books sell or how famous one becomes or any of that.
Right, exactly
right. And for us to have our humanity back with each other.
Exactly. If you've just joined us, I am talking with Rashmi Kilnani. She's the author of The Buddha Speaks, and we're talking about some of the aspects therein, and we encourage you to pick up a copy of her book. It's available, of course, at Amazon and a lot of the various internet outlets, as well as probably your local bookstore. It's also available, I would venture, through your website. Is that correct?
It's rashmikilnani.com. But it'll all take you back to barnesandnoble.com mm-hmm.
right.
or amazon.com.
Okay.
But do check out my website if you'd like to look at the reviews or YouTube shows on the book and the film project that we're doing.
Absolutely.
And other updates. And also on Facebook, there's author Rashmi Kilnani for inspiration, healing, and the latest updates on all the books.
Now, you have been channeling for how long?
Well, I've been channeling, I think, now for about 18 years, through studying Reiki and being initiated into many, many streams of mastery. Through each initiation, through all the spiritual practice, through the meditation, I began in psychic surgery and in different modalities of energy medicine that I practiced. In healing sessions, the ascended masters started coming through. So for somebody it would be a green Tara, for somebody it would be Buddha, for somebody it would be Moses, it would be Jesus, it would be... So to me, these beings are more real almost than human contact.
Mm.
And so it's an off-the-wall life, you know, but...
Well, there's a part of me
my
that's thinking.
My brother calls it my woo-woo-woo stuff.
Hey, well, hey, keep going forward with that. One of the things that you use the term wisdom teachings, and I also use the term ancient wisdom teachings to share with people that from what I have read over the years, the ancient wisdom teachings do not speak of the kind of life and livelihood, if you will, that we live today, and that in reality we were created for greater things than this. That this is demeaning. This is insulting in one sense to who we really are.
Yes.
Your observations.
Well, this is the densest part of reality. You know, it's 3D reality. There are many, many other dimensions of reality. And the Buddha very much transcended all of that. So he talked about Mahamudra, which is the great void, the great bliss, beyond the manifest, which is the epicenter of where the manifest worlds spring forth from.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not really talking in his ascended master even about, we're moving now from 3D reality to the fifth dimension, which is beyond time and space, where we can teleport and where our gizmos will show us what we can do without them.
What are your thoughts in regards to our gizmos? I mean, some people say that they're they're incredible innovations. I remember watching a documentary on the moon landing, the first time a man set foot on the moon, and the gentleman was saying, and I think it was Collins was his last name. He was one of the astronauts who said that you have more technology in your smartphone than I had with both hands on the controls of the command module when I went to the moon. And I thought, that's astounding. That's incredible. But that, to me, was the last time that we as a people, humans, not just Americans or Russians or whoever, we collectively did something. And they even made comment that when they traveled the world after their return from the moon, the people would say to them, not you did it, not America did it. They said, we finally did it. We did it. We went to the moon, because they were seeing it in a broader, more global, more humanitarian, if you will, endeavor.
And that is the key to the answer to the question, which is that the technology now, amazingly enough, is what will help humanity to wake up as a whole, because it is so fast, because the time of secrets and lies are completely over, because the youngsters and even a lot of others of different age groups are learning to get away from their television set that's telling them a whole set of things, you know, in one direction, to the internet and Facebook that are giving you so much more broad-based information on what's happening and the truth and so on. And the oneness of humanity beyond these artificial borders of this country and that country and so-called nationalism and, you know, all the other things that are going on. And so, but it's about balance, because ultimately we have to go back to the within as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the outer gizmos are like a bridge to help our minds to bridge back to the within, you know. So it is very exciting, but we mustn't overdo it because it can kill us.
Well, I know that as I take a look at the world around us, you know, and I start to do more observing, I think the solution just seems to me so simple. I have a threefold situation in my own life where, and I'm not afraid of sharing this, that, you know, I have, and I've shared this on the program before, I have high blood pressure. I have what they call sleep apnea, and
we'll send you some energy.
I thank you. And I also probably am maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 pounds over what my ideal weight would be. And I've done some processing mentally, interestingly enough. And the solution is you drop the weight, you solve the other two problems.
Yes.
And my doctor, he's just sitting there looking at me. He says, yeah, you're spot on. That's all you need to do. And it's not much. I mean, it's not like I've got to lose 20 or 40 or 60 pounds. And I've watched a man lose 90 pounds right in front of me in less than 6 months. And the man is healthy. His diabetes is gone. His hypertension is gone. I mean, it's just amazing. And again, it goes back to it's that simple. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to understand these things. We can understand these things.
But we have to give up our mesmerization with outer things and outer authority figures telling us what to do. So to tune within, you know, the Buddha keeps coming back to meditation, to being still, to going within. And that's something that feels very scary, very, very scary to most human beings.
Mm. Yeah.
By the way, for the high blood pressure, another very good thing is cayenne pepper. You just put lots of, you eat cayenne pepper every day with yogurt or whatever or on your salad or food.
Okay, I will do
they
that.
They say that it helps a lot with high blood pressure and heart attacks.
I also know that it helps with if there's an issue of congestion, whether it be in the chest or in the head, in the sinuses.
It's just very good for everything.
Yeah. Well, I will put that into my my grocery basket when I go to the store this afternoon. Now,
so how did this guy lose all this weight? Was he had to be disciplined, obviously.
Well, the thing was he went through a program locally, and he just said, "Hey, this is a no-brainer." His motivation was more of a financial, because if he didn't do this, his life insurance premiums were going to go right through the roof. So he had a monetary incentive, but as he began to lose the weight, he began to feel so much better.
Yeah.
That it was like there was a shift. It was the issue wasn't the monetary issue anymore. It was, wow, if I feel this good at this point, I can only imagine how good I'm going to feel when I reach the weight that I'm really shooting for. And a lot of people now look at him, but as he was losing the weight, of course, oh, you look fantastic. It's incredible. What are you doing? Da, da, da. And then he's lost all this weight. Now he's stopped. He's not losing the pounds anymore. He's balanced. He's stabilized. Of course, now they say, are you okay? And he's perfectly fine. He's perfectly fine. But I think that that's what we have to come to as individuals is that, that we have to make the choices, but we also have to tell ourselves when we make the choice, I can do it. Not how hard it's going to be, not how difficult.
It's easy, actually.
Once
we decide, you know, the whole thing is that dithering, shall I not, or what will it bring up, you know.
Yeah.
So if we just go through the fear, then we come out the other side, and it's always incredible.
Yeah.
I was a little bit nervous to come back to LA right now because, you know, I feel Mother Earth and I can feel all the earthquake stuff happening. And
mm-hmm.
Plus, I thought, you know, downtown LA with all these buildings, I've just been in the Blue Ridge. And I was tired from all the, radio shows and all the nonstop tour for the Buddha Speaks book. Here I am and I'm just scintillated by the energy and the creativity and it's just amazing. So I had to go through my fear to come out the other side. And it's always amazing when you, and in fact, as Joseph Campbell said, you know, where your fear is, that's where the pot of gold is.
Ah, yes. Ah, yes.
You know, and so the Buddha gives us these amazing tools, and just in the now moment, to come to that within space, you know, and not to be afraid of it, that whatever will arise, that the Buddha nature within us, our own inner wisdom, our own inner knowingness will take us through it and help to heal those parts and to come to wholeness and bliss.
Well, I am just incredibly blessed to have you on the program again and to share with our listeners from The Buddha Speaks. My guest is wonderful woman who has, again, you know, she's graced our studios, even though it be by phone. I hope one day to meet you in person, Rashmi Kilnani.
Definitely, Rich.
And look forward to that opportunity down the road. And I hope to talk with you when your third book comes out.
Thank you. And meanwhile, if you come to London, do come over, and sending all our listeners Buddha blessings, sending all our listeners the energy within their free will of peace and looking within and detached witnessing to come to bliss and nirvana.
Absolutely. Rashmi Kilnani is my guest. Again, the book is entitled The Buddha Speaks, and we encourage you to pick up a copy. Go to rashmikilnani.com. We are linked to her website, so it makes it even easier, and we encourage you to check out the radio program if you haven't had a chance to listen to the entire interview. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.